Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Nasdaq Market Site in the heart of New York City's Times Square. This is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. Under fire, the Wall Street Journal reporting Morgan Stanley is being probed by multiple federal regulators. The stock down sharply on concerns of how the firm is vetting wealthy clients, the source of their funds, and potential money laundering. We'll have the latest. Plus, Panda Plunge, how an S&P 500 company with a market cap of nearly $10 billion lost more than half its value today. And all because of a report from a short seller named Fuzzy Panda. The details straight ahead. And later, Apple's effort to goose Mac sales with an AI overhaul, Amazon's record-breaking day, and another EV maker losing its charge. I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq on the desk tonight. Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, Steve Grasso, and Guy Adami. And we start off with Morgan Stanley's legal mess. Shares of the investment bank sinking as much as 7% today after a report that the SEC and other federal regulators are probing the company's wealth management unit over how it vets clients. Leslie Picker's got all the details. She joins us now on the Fast Line. Leslie.
Hey, Melissa. Yeah, that 5.25% decline continuing a little bit in the after hour. And that was after you mentioned that Wall Street Journal report about a wider regulatory probe into the firm's wealth management division and how it is vetting clients at risk of money laundering. At issue, according to the journal sources who were anonymous in the piece, is basically whether Morgan Stanley has been, quote, sufficiently investigating the identities of prospective clients and where their wealth comes from, as well as how it monitors its clients' financial activity. Some of the probes are focused on the bank's international clients, and the journal reported in November that the Fed has been looking into similar issues, but today's story says there's involvement by other regulators as well, including the SEC and the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, among other Treasury Department offices. And that's, again, according to those journal sources. I reached out to Morgan Stanley for comment. They declined to comment here, as did the OCC. But Morgan Stanley reports its first quarter earnings next Tuesday. Executive Chairman James Gorman has addressed this in the past, so we'll be definitely listening in extra closely next week to see if any of this is discussed, Melissa.
In your view, Leslie, what has gotten worse since this was first disclosed? I mean, what I found interesting in the Wall Street Journal report was that there were actually lists of clients and that these lists were generated by separate agencies. And some of those clients on those separate lists actually overlap, which seemed to me like a real red flag that there is something about these same groups of clients that you know, sounded the alarms off.
And international, of course, a key focus here as well. What's interesting is it doesn't appear to be any kind of specific client or anything that, you know, sounded the alarms for regulators, that it was just a broader, you know, probe into kind of the processes and the way that they vet their clients. It also is notable they just filed their proxy, I want to say a week or two ago. This wasn't listed as one of the major legal issues that they have right now. So it appears to be kind of at this probe stage, but I think what sent the alarm bells ringing with this Wall Street Journal report is the idea that more regulatory agencies other than the Fed are looking into this. Therefore, it has expanded. So it's unclear exactly what at this time it will lead to.
All right. Leslie, thank you. Leslie Picker joining us tonight on the Fast Line. Wealth management, of course, a unit that really differentiates Morgan Stanley. That's what a lot of investors like about Morgan Stanley. And here it is under scrutiny here. Karen, how do you think about how this could impact that business and the growth of that business?
Yeah, so I own Morgan Stanley, so I'm not delighted by this. I mean, it has to weigh on it somewhat. Aside from just, you know, I don't know how you comply with these probes. That sort of takes a lot of work, takes a lot of focus. It's probably not great for morale. I don't know how you are in sort of a growth mode and trying to reinvigorate while you're doing that. So on the other hand, I'm not really sure how much is this really worth to them? I don't really know. I sort of feel like if they have great earnings, I don't know that people will care they have great earnings because they got to clear up this first. If they have bad earnings, that's probably bad. So I'm not that optimistic in the near term that this turns around very quickly. I don't want to say this is a giant disaster at all. I think I have to read more about how did they, in the 10K, how did they describe this issue? Interesting that because Leslie brought up it's not in the proxy.
Right.
So, and how did it get bigger? Now there's sort of some juicy, you know, one account is a Caribbean account or seems to be in the Caribbean, but claims to be
right.
elsewhere. And it actually had a lot more money than right. the occupation of the person whose account that is.
It was actually a guy's account.
Was it? Okay. Was so we've right? narrowed that down, which is good. All right. Still, I think it will weigh on the stock in the short term.
It's been a fascinating couple of years for Morgan Stanley. It's been a fascinating 5 years, really, if you think about the business that they've taken, which was very reliant on M&A, broker-dealer dynamics, investment banking for sure, into a business that's now more than 50% in asset management. That's smoothed out the business. It's added to the multiple. We're talking about the acquisition of Eaton Vance, certainly the E-Trade acquisition. Eaton Vance also has Parametric. I mean, there's a lot of specialized asset management in here. It's been very impressive. But if you think about what the impact of this headline is, first of all, AML, money laundering rules and whatnot are no joke in the asset management business. And Morgan Stanley is not treating them as such. I'm not implying anything here. What I'm saying is this is something that involves multiple regulatory bodies within the U.S. government, including the Treasury. So there are dynamics here that I think will take some time. Whether this impacts the stock, I mean, I have to say the stock's been kind of dead money for 2 years. And it's amazing how we do a Morgan Stanley Goldman Sachs comparison. And there was a 2 year period where Morgan Stanley outperformed Goldman by, you know, 25-30%. And for the last, I would say, really since that peak of the Morgan Stanley valuation in early 22, it's underperformed Goldman Sachs by 25%.
Yeah, so that I was just going to touch on that. It has underperformed the whole entire group. And if you go back to January 16th, they paid hundreds of millions of dollars in regulatory fees. So is this a pattern? Is it the same thing? Is it a derivative of the same thing? Is it all KYC? Is it know your client? I don't know what the difference is, but for me, I would wait. Why would you want to rush in here? Why would you want to buy a stock that just had a collapse? It was, by the way, a bigger percentage collapse in January off of that January 16th headline, even though it was in it a little bit before. It was a bigger collapse back then, rallied back, had a good couple of months, and now we're dealing with the same type of thing. And once again, to Tim's point, this has underperformed the group by a large margin for quite some time.
The visual goes a long way. So let's pretend this news didn't exist. And let's to Tim and Steve's point. I mean, where Goldman Sachs is making effectively an all-time high, and it's been sort of lower left, upper right for a while, Morgan Stanley has been flatlining since this time in 2022. It's basically been an $85 stock the entire time. It had a huge run prior from like $30 to, I think, 101, and it sold off, and here we are. So that's on what's been an extraordinary tape. And obviously a great environment for the Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgans of the world. So it's underperformed. You throw this on top, and I guess what Steve just said, why rush in ahead of earnings at this point? There's no compelling reason, given the fact that you can hear from them next week, and there's more to come with this, to buy the stock unless you feel very confident that earnings are going to blow it out of the water and this is a non-story. And I'm confident or not of those things.
Banks pay fees all the time. They pay fines all the time for various charges. So how do we...
Cost of doing business.
Right, it's the cost of doing business.
It feels like
so is this part of it, or do you think about sort of the interim where maybe opening new accounts might slow because they have to be more careful about how they do that? They have to implement new processes, which may cost more money, more compliance staff, which costs more money. I mean, how do we think about the actual impact?
Well, James Gorman pointed out that in January that they're spending more money as if, you know, there was like a knowledge that this was something that they're dealing with on software and systems to really be more involved here. I think it will impact in terms of processes. It has to. Having said that, I think this is going to be an overreaction. This isn't a reason to me not to buy the stock. The reason to not buy the stock is I think there may be some dynamics in the wealth management, asset management overall trends that I think, look, it's been as good of a spot for that business for the last 2 years, and the stock's underperformed. I don't love that. I also, you know, I was reading a report by Jefferies. They point out that in terms of, you know, debt capital markets are actually kind of back. Equity capital markets are coming back. M&A's proxy, you know, essentially their M&A advisory fees put them in terms of market share. They've fallen. I think they're the lowest they've been in a long time. So the dynamics here, I think, for the other parts of the business aren't great. Those are the things I'm more worried about. These headlines are things to pay attention to, but this isn't the reason why I would not be owning the stock.
All right. RBC's top bank analyst thinks Morgan Stanley's issue should be taken very seriously. Gerard Cassidy is ahead of U.S. bank strategy. He's got a hold rating and a $91 price target on Morgan Stanley. Gerard, great to have you with us. You've been listening to our conversation. How do you think this actually impacts Morgan Stanley?
Over the near term, Melissa, it is certainly going to weigh on the performance of the company. It's unfortunate that they're running into these problems because BSA, AML, as everyone's been talking about, are very serious. They will get to the bottom of these problems. They will solve these problems, but it will take time. It will take some money. And as I think Karen pointed out, it's going to distract a number of people in the organization from growing that business. And I think it was Guy that mentioned that, you know, this has been a real source of strength for the company in increasing its valuation over the last 5 years. And now it's unfortunately running into some issues.
Hey, Gerard, it's Karen. Thanks for coming on. I'm a little confused about sort of the dripping out of, all right, so there seemed to be a problem in January. Now it seems to be bigger. How do you think that happened? I'd much rather, as a sad shareholder, see a giant settlement, fine, whatever it is, and the end of the issue, as opposed to this kind of slow burn.
No, I understand what you mean, Karen. And we saw it actually with New York Community Bank when you saw their problems in January, totally different reasons. But what outsiders sometimes don't fully appreciate, as much as we think the regulators talk to one another for a coordinated effort, that's not always the case. And I think that may have been the situation here. We don't know for sure, but it wouldn't surprise me that, you know, the regulators all do, they're all in their own silos and they are very protective of their turf and they go about it their own way. And that therefore that January announcement may have brought the other regulators on board to take a look as well.
Let's downshift, Gerard, if we may, since you're here and you're on the Mount Rushmore
of bank analysts.
Bank of America is your top pick in the space, I believe. So the question I have is, does that mean by definition you have to think rates are going down? Because when 10-year yields were 5% and their hold-to-maturity losses were $114 billion, this was a $25 stock. It's not coincidence that it rallied as rates went down. What are your thoughts in terms of BAC and interest rates?
It's a really good question, Guy, because when you think about Bank America, one of the great strengths of this company, it's true for some of the others like J.P. Morgan and regional banks like Fifth Third and M&T Bancorp, it's the core consumer deposits. That's the critical story for a bank. And as we all know, following the financial crisis, when you had rates at 0 to 25 basis points, core consumer deposits were not that valuable. Now, with rates at over 5%, they're extremely valuable. And so the Bank America long-term story is about that phenomenal deposit base they have. But to your point on the held-to-maturity losses, when you take a look at that, the stock obviously was lower, and that was when everybody was very fearful of what that meant for maybe capital. But now people realize that the held-to-maturity losses will weigh on their margin, but over time they're burning off. So we're 6 to 9 months, you know, further into it, so it's not as much of an issue. But I think we're going to hear about the AOCI. That's the marks that they take through capital on the calls this week, because those numbers have grown for everybody.
Gerard, great to see you. Thank you for your analysis. Gerard Cassidy.
Welcome.
So, of course, we're just at the precipice of all these bank earnings coming out. What are you most worried about here?
Well, we've been dealing with the inverted yield curve for quite some time. The banks have done just fine on it. I think new loan generation is what you want to see. And with interest rates so high, that's going to be a headwind for the banks. That's something different. We haven't seen that, and it's getting longer in the tooth. J.P. Morgan has outperformed everybody by a pretty decent margin. So I don't want to make it really complicated. I just stick with J.P. Morgan.
Mm. And so Karen likes to hear that. But yes, what do you think about Bank of America in terms of Gerard's explanation? I think it's an interesting one in that some of that portfolio has worked off for this many months, you know, into it. But if rates go back, or if they stay at 4.5 or go north of 4.5, what happens?
Well, this is sort of foregone margin that they can't earn because they have so much money out further duration that there's in the hold to maturity.
Right.
And what he was talking about, AOCI, is a mark to market, which it can be variable. Some people look through it. I just want to hear what they think of the economy and how the consumer is doing. And, you know, Jamie didn't seem that optimistic on his letter, but that's sort of his way. He's always, you know, a lot to be afraid of. I think it's going to be good earnings. There's a lot of good things going on, multiple parts of the business.
I think net interest income is really important for these banks, and that's only gotten better.
All right, let's turn now to Apple, which saw a huge pop in today's session. Shares jumping after the reports that the tech titan plans to overhaul its entire Mac line with AI-focused chips. Apple hoping to boost sluggish computer sales with the new processor update. The stock's 4%+ rise. Its best gain since last May. Wow, it got a little AI love today, finally, Guy.
Too bad Dan's not here, because I'm sure he'd wax poetic. But yeah, and it traded 90 million shares, which is a good sign. It didn't do this on light volume, which is encouraging. You know, the fact that it keeps pushing down to that moving average, seemingly holding it, is encouraging. But is this going to basically cure all the ills that we've talked about now for a while? For one day, it has. The same way, by the way, it did, I think, 2.5 or 3 weeks ago, where you had that sort of one and a half day blip before it headed south again. So let's see tomorrow and over the next couple of days.
The timing of this is interesting because they just had a computer refresh in October. So this would be a very quick refresh in terms of its new Macs and, you know, laptops, et cetera. The timing is also ahead of the WWC. So, you know, you could have a 1-2 punch here of AI excitement for Apple.
Yeah, and I think as a couple of the brokers are put out in the reports, I mean, the time is right for this. So a stock that's been looking for a catalyst, a stock that has a date where often there is a catalyst and a dynamic here. Apple hasn't been sitting around in the AI world doing zero. I mean, there's no question. And we've talked all about how that installed base is so powerful in terms of when they really decide to make it an impact on those phones themselves. So the fact that we're getting some MacBook dynamics and we have this event coming up, I think it probably eases higher.
Coming up, retail rates and a furry panda. A short seller with a funny name is sinking an insurance stock. A check-in on Capri and Tapestry's potential deal, and what Karen is seeing in the charts, and where the 10-year could be heading after this week's inflation data. All that ahead. And later, Amazon's all-time high. The e-commerce giant jumping to records in today's session. What CEO Andy Jassy is seeing from consumers, and if that stock is primed to keep popping. Don't go anywhere. Fast Money's back in two.
This is Fast Money with Melissa Lee, right here on CNBC.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Shares of Globe Life, an insurance firm in the S&P 500, making a comeback in the after hours after responding to a short seller's report. Fuzzy Panda Research is the name of the company that accused Globe Life subsidiary American Income Life of insurance fraud. That division accounts for about half of Globe Life's total underwriting margins. Shares were down more than 53% during the regular session. CNBC's Contessa Brewer is here with the very latest on this. Contessa.
Yeah, and in fact, at one point, Melissa, shares of Globe Life were actually paused. The trading was paused because of the volatility, and they fell to their lowest level in more than 10 years. On that report from Fuzzy Panda Research disclosing the short position. So Fuzzy Panda says, look, there are multiple instances of insurance fraud that they claim were ignored by the management over the past 2 years. Here's the response that we got from the company today. They say, we are disappointed to see that self-motivated short sellers push inflammatory allegations in order to drive down Globe Life stock price. We reviewed the report and found it to be wildly misleading, mixing anonymous allegations with recycled points pushed by the plaintiff's law firms to coerce Globe Life into settlements. The motivations are driven solely by short-term profits. And they go on to say that they take these allegations seriously. They don't stand for any of those misdeeds. Meanwhile, we know that the Department of Justice opened a probe that was disclosed in an 8K in March by the company. And Globe Life says it's been cooperating with the U.S. Attorney's Office in response to subpoenas that were issued. By the way, we believe that Globe Life and its subsidiary companies have more life insurance policies, more policy holders than any other life insurance company in the country. And they really target their business toward lower and middle income customers that have an average life insurance policy of, say, $30,000 to $40,000. So it's a totally different demographic than some of their bigger competitors. And analysts that I spoke with say this company has a solid track record. It has a solid management team, predictable and stable results compared to some of their probes. But we will, but we're going to wait and see how the DOJ probe plays out and, of course, what the short sellers report, the impact that has on the stock right now. Melissa, I'll send it back to you.
Contessa, I'm just curious, when you speak to these analysts and they say that they have very stable earnings, I mean, are they almost too stable? Or, you know, oddly stable? I mean, is there any sort of shock about this report?
What they, yes, the analysts that I spoke with say because of the quality of the management that's been in place, people that have been operating in the life insurance business for years and years, there was some shock about the disclosure of the investigation and the lawsuits that have been filed. But on the other hand, they employ, I was told, somewhere in the neighborhood of 10,000 independent agents. And so there has been some sort of like shrug, like if you have 10,000 independent agents, could there be misdeeds? Absolutely. But again, I go back to what the company says. They say that they are operating in accordance with the highest level of ethics and integrity. And that they don't tolerate the kind of behavior that is alleged in the lawsuit, in the DOJ probe, and now by the short sellers report.
All right. Contessa, thank you. Mm-hmm. Contessa Brewer with the very latest on this story. It is up 9% in the after hours, but far from recouping the losses that it suffered in today's session. It's worth noting, too, that just last week at the Sohn conference, Globe Life was a company that was highlighted by Orso Partners in a negative way. So it's not the first time that there have been some allegations. And as Contessa had mentioned, the DOJ also opened up its investigation just in the beginning of March.
All fair. Mm-hmm. 56% or whatever it was, that's interesting. Now, Fuzzy Panda, that's the first time we've used that
term. An anonymous short seller.
Fair enough. They should bring forth, though, they said we have found extensive allegations. I mean, those should come to light at some point, right? I would think. Number two, if you don't believe it, if you think it's Fugazi, you have reason to believe in this company, they report next week. They should actually probably, I would think, if they could, come out. Karen can probably speak to this. Report tomorrow and discuss this.
Yes.
With all that said, I mean, this stock traded 36 times normal volume today. So if you're into sort of the casino model, it might be an interesting shot on the long side just on the back of that.
I think you bring up an excellent point. If you are there, I mean, this is a crisis, right? And you're
yes.
in the business of anything that's a financial product in any way. You want your customers to think of you as a good institution, right? So if they must have some sense. The quarter ended. If they really should address this if they could. I mean, it is, I get why they're upset, right? Fuzzy Panda. We don't know who Fuzzy Panda is. The anonymity of it is, you know, you got to think about that. As to how to trade, I have no idea. It just seems so, this is crazy. So I wouldn't be long or short, but I totally agree with you on how they should handle it if they can.
I mean, we're not talking about a micro cap or small cap company being pushed around. I mean, this is a huge company listed on the S&P 500 that just got whacked in today's session.
This brought it back to levels, I don't know if Guy said it, back to February 16th, basically, 2016 levels. So this was I'm not advocating someone to run in and try to buy it off this dip. But when you're looking at something like this, they're already buying in the after hours. We show the chart. It's up over 8%. I think the way to take this is if you want to take a stab on very small amounts and know nothing, you're just at the casino. But if you know the other companies that were dragged down by it, all the other names that you don't think are going to have the same problem, maybe you want to buy those on a dip.
Regarding the quiet period or earnings, or should they come out, you know, Piper has a note out saying that this creates essentially an information vacuum, and investors have nothing to go with. And could they come in front of that? I don't know. It also points out that there is more headline risk when you're selling products to retail folks, as opposed to institutional. And this is the kind of business that this company's been in. And again, maybe They've been too good. But by the way, I mean, aren't pandas already fuzzy? So, I mean, wouldn't that be
furry?
I don't know, fuzzy. That's a fair point. But yeah. Maybe it's just a descriptor. I mean, you say yellow duck. You know, or some other.
Young rookie.
I love pandas, though.
That one makes me crazy.
Young rookie. You could have somebody that's new to something, sport. A sport, like, who is not young according to age, but young in terms of experience.
It's funny because in sports, if someone is relatively young, they often call him a man-child if he's particularly good. Am I right?
We're off the rails.
I think we'll leave this at that.
Off the rails.
Yeah. A lot more Fast Money to come. I know you want to see it. Here's what's coming up next.
Looking into luxury, what the Jimmy Choo charts are saying about the likelihood a coach deal will get done, and how one of our traders is gearing up for the outcome. Plus, this week's inflation data sending rates surging, and our next guest sees the 10-year heading even higher. Just how high he thinks things can go, next. You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Shares of Capri taking a tumble again today. It is down 9% in the last week and nearly 30% below the price coach parent Tapestry offered for the company back in August. The drop comes as the FTC reviews the $8.5 billion deal. Karen, could the deal get shut down?
That is a possibility. Uh-huh. There's several possibilities. The stock is trading like clearly there is a big issue in the deal, and that big issue is U.S. antitrust. So a few things could happen. The deal could go through as it's currently structured. That would be $57 per share in cash. But they need antitrust approval to be able to do that. The second thing is that the deal gets restructured in some way that addresses any antitrust concerns. And maybe the buyer says, you know what, it's not as good. We're going to cut the price of the deal. And Capri agrees to that. So some lower deal. The third thing is that antitrust suit and that they prevail. I think in two of those three outcomes, mm-hmm. you make money. In the third outcome, you lose. Now, the stock was at 35 before the deal. Let's say it goes way lower than that if in a broken deal. And I'm assuming, just for figuring out the risk reward, that it goes substantially lower than that. I do think, though, the stock is saying there is going to be an antitrust suit. I don't think that'll be so shocking to the if we wake up tomorrow and see that. So I think a lot of bad news is really priced in. I did what we call sort of a Texas hedge. I also bought some Tapestry. Mm. In the event that the deal breaks, I think there were a lot of people who thought Tapestry overpaid, or maybe it's not, you know, worth what it should, what it could have been back then. And I think Tapestry would go up.
I don't think it's so much of a Texas hedge, though. I think that's the smartest thing to do in this situation, because everyone's complaining about the deal. If the deal gets canceled, then Tapestry, in effect, should go up. What I think the bigger question is why they're both going down. I think everything that you'd said that about the deal not going through, but what about the PVH guide? I think that's, if you look at PVH on a chart, that's tied into both of their collapses. So I think it's more to do with that, less to do with the case.
So probably the deal gets restructured.
Probably gets restructured, but either way, I think you buy Tapestry, and that will be a sigh of relief to buy that.
Coming up, just how high will the 10-year yield climb? Inflation data this week sending yields soaring, and our next guest is eyeing key levels for rates, but the charts are telling him next. Plus, an old favorite, pops and drops.
Mm. Oh.
That's back. How our traders are handling the moves in Nike, Robinhood, and Rivian. Do not go anywhere. Fast Money's back in two.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Shares of Capri taking a tumble again today. It is down 9% in the last week and nearly 30% below the price coach parent Tapestry offered for the company back in August. The drop comes as the FTC reviews the $8.5 billion deal. Karen, could the deal get shut down?
That is a possibility. Uh-huh. There's several possibilities. The stock is trading like clearly there is a big issue in the deal, and that big issue is U.S. antitrust. So a few things could happen. The deal could go through as it's currently structured. That would be $57 per share in cash. But they need antitrust approval to be able to do that. The second thing is that the deal gets restructured in some way that addresses any antitrust concerns. And maybe the buyer says, you know what, it's not as good. We're going to cut the price of the deal. And Capri agrees to that. So some lower deal. The third thing is that antitrust suit and that they prevail. I think in two of those three outcomes, mm-hmm. you make money. In the third outcome, you lose. Now, the stock was at 35 before the deal. Let's say it goes way lower than that if in a broken deal. And I'm assuming, just for figuring out the risk reward, that it goes substantially lower than that. I do think, though, the stock is saying there is going to be an antitrust suit. I don't think that'll be so shocking to the if we wake up tomorrow and see that. So I think a lot of bad news is really priced in. I did what we call sort of a Texas hedge. I also bought some Tapestry. Mm. In the event that the deal breaks, I think there were a lot of people who thought Tapestry overpaid, or maybe it's not, you know, worth what it should, what it could have been back then. And I think Tapestry would go up.
I don't think it's so much of a Texas hedge, though. I think that's the smartest thing to do in this situation, because everyone's complaining about the deal. If the deal gets canceled, then Tapestry, in effect, should go up. What I think the bigger question is why they're both going down. I think everything that you'd said that about the deal not going through, but what about the PVH guide? I think that's, if you look at PVH on a chart, that's tied into both of their collapses. So I think it's more to do with that, less to do with the case.
So probably the deal gets restructured.
Probably gets restructured, but either way, I think you buy Tapestry, and that will be a sigh of relief to buy that.
Coming up, just how high will the 10-year yield climb? Inflation data this week sending yields soaring, and our next guest is eyeing key levels for rates, but the charts are telling him next. Plus, an old favorite, pops and drops.
Mm. Oh.
That's back. How our traders are handling the moves in Nike, Robinhood, and Rivian. Do not go anywhere. Fast Money's back in two.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks climbing back from an inflation-fueled sell-off. The Dow finishing near the flat line. The S&P up 0.75%. And the Nasdaq surging to a record close for the first time in nearly 3 weeks, up more than 1.5%. Shares of UNH lower after a report that the company's chairman and three other execs sold more than $100 million in stock before an antitrust probe into the company became public. UNH received the DOJ notice in October, but it didn't become public until February. Shares of Trump Media down another 4% today, down nearly 50% in April. DJT's market cap now under $4.5 billion. CarMax sliding more than 9% after missing the top and the bottom line this morning. The company also saying it may not meet its long-term sales target due to a slower recovery in the used car market. And shares of Constellation Brands, an all-time high today on the back of its earnings. The company beating on the top and the bottom line and citing its outperforming beer business. Mm. Moving on to the interest rate roller coaster. The yield on the 10-year Treasury touching a fresh five-month high today, hitting 4.6% for the first time since mid-November. It is up 80 basis points since the end of last year. It hasn't quite climbed back to that 16-year high above 5%, but with a steady rise this year, have we cleared the path to retest and even surpass those records? Our next guest says 5.3%. could be in the cards. Ben Emmons is a senior portfolio manager and head of fixed income at New Edge Wealth. Ben, always good to see you.
Good to be back. Thank you for having me.
How long does it take to get to that 5.3% you think we're going to hit?
So it does look like we're back to where we were in the summer of last year. I remember that we had yields starting around 375 and there was a lot of supply coming in, strong economy. Everybody started to reassess the risk of bonds. We're today at 455. But the risk of bonds is again high. So yesterday, not only that CPI number being hotter and that, I guess, inflation risk is underpriced, but we're dealing with a lot of supply and we're dealing with a Federal Reserve that's cautious and has to maybe start shifting its message, saying we're not only staying on hold, but if we're dealing with more hot inflation, we're going to have to get ahead of it, right? So there's a lot of pressure under this market. So I think it could well lead to this 5% level that we saw in the summer of last year. Now, the technicals, as I've shown it once before, this Fibonacci chart from 07 till now, you know, we made really good support at 61.8 retracement, which was like around 3.5%. We're now above the 67% retracement, which is around 4.25%. So that leads you to the retracement of the top. The technicals, I think, have been a lot of power here. So I do think that's possible to get to that high.
Technicals, without question, Tim has talked about that. But at 30,000 feet, understanding you're looking at the technicals, what do you think it means for the equity world if we get to 5.3%?
It means pressure, I think. I mean, it is a level of where treasury yields become restrictive for the economy. Right? And I think that's the assessment for the stock market to say, okay, Fed, you having a 10-year yield the same as the Fed funds rate, that puts a lot of pressure on housing, that puts a pressure on industrials, on anything that's interest rate sensitive. I think that's going to be a bit of a problem for the stock market.
Ben, let me ask you, do you think we'll see something like last summer when we saw the quarterly refunding announcement, surprise to the upside, and then the cadence of how they would do it? Do you think we'll see see that show again?
To some extent, Karen. It was interesting. A few weeks ago, that Treasury Borrowing Advisory Committee, the TBAC, they had a presentation out on the deficit and what they think of supply. It was notable that they forecasted T-bill supply to decline, but all the long-term Treasury supply to stay the same, which is large currently. We, you know, auctions of $40 billion to $60 billion. It didn't project more supply on the long end, but it definitely kept it the same while T-bill supply goes down. I think that's the tension for the Treasury market. If the refunding shows that, they're bringing scaling back T-bill issuance, the market's going to have to price in that term premium. That term premium, by the way, the Fed put out a model on this, is negative currently. That is not a good signal, I think, for bonds.
You talk about in your notes also the yen carry trade. And for people that don't follow this trade, help people understand the implications of this. But that you feel this is also another potential pressure on treasuries, effectively Japanese or anyone borrowing in yen and investing in U.S. dollars, especially the treasury market. Talk about that. And the move in the yen, which has been contrary to what people would have expected, right, with the end of negative interest rates in Japan.
Yeah, you know, the yen going so quickly through 152, which was a little bit of a line in the sand. No liquidity there, so they're testing even higher than 153. Last night, there was this comments out by this official who's actually in charge to, you know, say to the BOJ, go ahead and execute, right? There's actually some one of those officials that actually said, like, we're pretty close to doing something, right? We're ready to act, and the market just ignored it and go higher. So as the yen weakens, there will at some point be this intervention, probably. But what you really are going to likely see, I think, is that this yen
selling of treasuries, though, to cover that yen short.
Exactly. You're going to see that unwind starting. Now, there's two parts there, Tim, is that you have the Japanese that own treasuries that are hedged to yen. But then you also have foreign investors who own Japanese stocks that are hedged to dollars. So I think there's a real tension here of, like, having a short position in yen with foreign investors, with the domestic investors in Japan holding long treasuries. So that's, I think, where, you know, if we're getting this yen intervention, I think this is a real pressure point for the treasury market.
All right. Ben, thank you for coming in. Always good to see you. Ben Emmons of Medley. So what do you think, New Edge, excuse me, what do you think in terms of 5.3%, the impact on equities?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. You can look at it. If you want to look at it through glasses half full, if you look at the large cap tech names, those, they still have pricing power. They have a bunch of cash on their balance sheets, so they're not in any risk. So I don't think that and they run the market, right? They're a larger percent of the market, the S&P and the NASDAQ. So with them hanging in, the market hangs in. I don't think they should sell off because they have a ton of cash. We've seen them become safety bets. And if they're running the entire market and we know where rates are now, we know rates are definitively at some point going lower. They could be higher for longer, but I don't think we're in the game where they're going to raise rates. So once raising rates is off the table, mm-hmm. and the Fed looks at the PCE, you're not going to get the spike in car insurance that you had affecting CPI there. So I think you still have a shot. I know they took June off the table. I think they still have a shot for June. If not June, it's July. November's off the table because it's 2 days after the election. So that's a moot point at this point.
I mean, Bank of America today said one in December, and even that one is a little bit iffy at this point. It might be more of a 2025 story. And if that is the case, and we have auction after auction, yesterday's 10-year auction was bad. It was not good.
It was not good. Today's 30 wasn't good.
Right.
And if you look at the Fed Fund futures curve, December has 25 bips in it. That's it. In fact, if you look at where we are, you know, June actually is 3 bips above where we are. So, I mean, it's a dynamic where you can see what futures are doing. Doesn't mean they're right, but it is indicating higher rates.
It's interesting, quickly, the president yesterday, when asked the question about that, said there will be a rate. Now, I don't know why he's sort of swimming in those waters, but he put it out there. But I still think it would be, given everything that I'm seeing, any rate cut this year doesn't make any sense.
Coming up, we are digging in on a couple of fast movers. Nike jumping on a big upgrade while EV maker Rivian hits its lowest levels ever. Should you just do it? Pump the brakes on these names. Next. Plus, Amazon hitting an all-time high today, nearly doubling in the last year. What CEO Andy Jassy said this morning that kicked the tech titan into high gear right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Time for a look at some of the day's pops and drops. Three fast movers that caught our eye, starting with Nike. That stock up more than 3% today after Bank of America upgraded it to a buy, literally saying it's time to just do it. I love analyst humor, don't you? Analysts writing that Nike's estimates look achievable and that they see mid-single-digit revenue growth with margin expansion for the company. It was Nike's best day since November. Tim, how are you feeling about this one these days?
I get it. I get that the multiples come down substantially. I get, you know, mid-single digits is certainly we've tempered our expectations on Nike. And I think second half of 25 is really when you're going to start to see this thing take off again in terms of the earnings growth. I think you could probably own it here. I like it long term for sure. I think in a tape that gets a little uglier, I think Nike's going to go lower.
Mm-hmm. Karen, quick.
Exactly like he does. I own some. Not a big position, but all the reasons you said. I mean, it does deserve a premium multiple, which it has. Now it has to earn it.
Do not miss an exclusive interview with Nike CEO John Donahoe. That is tomorrow, 10:30 a.m. Eastern time, right here on CNBC. Next up, Robinhood analysts at Citi downgrading the trading platform to a sell, saying most of this year's gains have been because of Bitcoin's rally and that the valuations have gotten disconnected from fundamentals. Robinhood initially dropping 3.5% this morning on the call, but rallied to end the day up nearly 4%. Guy.
We call that a tell in the business there, Melms. And at the poker table, if you don't identify the sucker in 20 minutes, it's typically you, right? So this call, maybe it's interesting and maybe they're playing a little stock market here, but the fact that the stock rallied the way it did, understanding the broader tape did as well, very impressive. Stay long the name.
Lastly, Rivian shares of the EV maker dropping almost 7% today and concerns that price cuts at Ford would sap demand for its R1T pickup. Ford lowering its prices for its electric F-150 Lightning by as much as $5,500. Shares of Rivian now down nearly 60% this year, trading at the lowest level since its 2021 IPO. Grasso.
This is right around that level where Rivian did bounce to in the 20s. And when you look at price cuts, I think that price cuts just make people hold off. We saw it with Tesla, where if you bought a Tesla and then you had it in your driveway and they cut prices the next month, you felt bad. So, and if you were going to buy a Tesla, you held back. So if Ford's cutting prices, I think people are going to hold back on Ford's. Rivian's got some deep-pocketed investors still with it. It's about cash burn for Rivian, but I like the price level. I would buy it.
What was your take on the price cut?
I think it shows possibly Ford being a little bit more on offense. This is what Tesla said at one point. We've gotten good news out of Ford in terms of their EV business and the demand and their ability actually to deliver on estimates. So I see this more through the eyes of Ford. I wouldn't own Rivian, not because I'd like to drive a Rivian. I might even like to own one, but I don't want to own the stock.
We should do that. We should test drive. Remember we test drove the Tesla a long time ago?
We had a fun day.
Do we have a race?
It was a day at the mall.
If you call Rivian, you can't get anyone on the phone. It's a pet peeve I have. I get it. They're an EV company. They're futuristic. But you got to have them parked outside the NASDAQ. We should be able to jump in them. The fact that I can't call and speak to an individual, a human, is a problem.
This really unleashed a real
touch
rant
the nerve.
Here. There are triggers here on this.
He's more angry than I am.
We're going to avoid these triggers from now on, I promise you out there. Coming up, Amazon's all-time high share surging to record levels, and CEO Andy Jassy is weighing in on what he is seeing out of the consumer. Those details next. More Fast Money in 2. Welcome back to Fast Money. Amazon hitting a record high today for the first time since July 2021. The tech titan now up nearly 90% in the past year. CEO Andy Jassy sat down with Andrew Ross Sorkin on Squawk Box this morning and spoke about what he is seeing from consumers.
Consumers are spending. They're just trading down You know, a place where we see it, real impact is, you know, in discretionary items, things like TVs or computers or electronics. You know, we're growing our market segment share at a faster rate there than others, but still at a lower rate than what we see in a healthy economy.
Jassy touted the steps Amazon has taken with Prime Shipping in his annual shareholder letter. Same day and overnight delivery increased 70% year over year. Wow. What do you think?
Well, so it's two completely different parts of the business.
Yeah.
Both are doing well, even if the consumer's trading down. They just, I mean, when they talk about the power of that market, it is kind of amazing. You can see how the government would have some issues there because, I mean, they touch, you know, what he's talked about, 40-some-odd percent mm-hmm. of consumers. That is kind of amazing. And then on the other side, obviously, you got, you know, the cloud. But one thing about that, though, that was interesting, if Amazon and Meta, they're all doing their own chips, you got to wonder, where for NVIDIA, what does that mean?
Right.
You know, I think the most attractive part of the story is still the AWS side. And this is the gentleman who built AWS, right? So he had large shoes to fill. But this is when Amazon really got interesting as a tech play. And pre-split price, it was at $190. It ripped up to pre-split twice prices. And now the stock, the tailwind for me is still the AWS. With AI, you're still going to have the need for a lot more of AWS's infrastructure. And this is the gentleman who built it. I would still put my faith in Amazon.
Agreed. Stay long, and I think, in the earnings the end of the month. And by 2026-ish, you know, this is probably the first $1 trillion in revenue for a year company at the current trajectory. So good for Amazon.
I think, you know, this letter to shareholders had a lot in it for everybody. By the way, that was an interview of two Scarsdale High School graduates that you were just watching from a third. And you have a case where I think they're delivering products at record speed. I think they're lowering costs. I think this is a stock you stay long, and this is looks best of the Mag 7.
Up next, final trades. Let's go around the horn, Tim.
Constellation Brands. These were great numbers. They beat top line. They also better beer numbers. Constellation.
Congrats.
Karen.
Yes, as we head into bank earnings tomorrow, I think you want to be long the XLF and short the KRE.
Stephen.
Analog devices, ADI, just basically on technicals, but I think it's the fundamental story.
Is he in trouble, by the way?
Gearing up. What'd I do?
I know. I just Stevened you, and I'm going to guide Christopher that one over there.
Yeah. Ooh. Jason playing some tremendous tunes.
Yes, nice work.
By the way, Scarsdale High School, all three with Tim Seymour in the Scarsdale
amazing.
Hall of Fame.
Scarsdale, New York, by the way.
HOR.
It's a low bar.
SPR, Melms, still goes higher from here.
Thank you for watching Fast Money. We'll see you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast. Meantime, do not go anywhere. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/fastmoneydisclaimer.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.